Yo, what up? This is D Knight, and you're listening to the Part of the Interaction podcast. Hope you all had a wonderful holiday season. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Chanukah is one of my favorite singers. Mr. Smokey Robinson would say, Happy Kwanzaa. I don't really know anybody who celebrates that, but hey, look, I ain't got to get them all in. You know the routine. Happy holidays to all of you all. Happy New Year as well. Hopefully you'll ring again 2024 with the fun, joyous celebration, because it's probably going to be fucking crazy after that insanity until the 2024 election. So get your fun and pleasurable times in now while you can. While you can. It's a crazy week, of course. Like, I know I say that every episode of the podcast, but it's like it always holds true. There's never a week where things haven't gone totally off the rails, as they did when Nikki Haley, candidate running for the GOP nomination for president, was asked the other day at a town hall of some sort, what was the cause of the Civil War? And her answer didn't include slavery. It seems fucking impossible, right? She rambled off a number of words, none of which had anything to do with the mention of slavery. She then asked the gentleman what he believed was the cause of the Civil War. His response was, "I'm not running for president," which I feel was a very astute observation given the circumstances. He then proceeded to question Nikki Haley as to why her answer didn't include slavery. And Nikki's response to that was, "Well, what do you want me to say about slavery? Next question." Wow. Yeah, it's really, really difficult to even know where to begin with that. I feel like, you know, what was the cause of the Civil War is the easiest slam dunk question for a presidential candidate since the 1860s. Like, is slavery bad? Yes or no? Like, it doesn't get much more difficult than that. All you got to say is the Civil War was fought over slavery, and slavery is bad. See how easy that was, kids? You too can run for president if you're a Republican as well. At least you can beat Nikki Haley. And in case you're wondering why it is that Nikki Haley seemed incapable of answering such a simple, straightforward question, I mean, if you know anything about Nikki Haley's previous stint as an elected official, as the governor of South Carolina, there was a well-documented instance of Nikki Haley's refusal to remove the Confederate flag from the state capitol in South Carolina up and until racist white supremacist Dylann Roof massacred a bunch of black people in the name of the Confederate flag. And, you know, Republicans took that opportunity to try and, I don't know, defend the legacy of the Confederacy and the Confederate flag, saying Dylann Roof co-opted the meaning and tortured the representation of what that flag stood for. And oh, no. Dylann Roof waving that Confederate flag, broadcasting his intentions to murder innocent black people. I mean, that's exactly what the Confederate flag stood for. I mean, it just is what it is. Sorry if you're not a fan of that interpretation of what that flag means, but that's what it is. It's not a symbol of heritage or service. It is a symbol of rebellion against the United States and a symbol of a commitment to racism and enslaving black people. I mean, it's just fairly obvious. I don't know why anyone would choose to try and misrepresent. Well, I do know why they would choose to try and misrepresent that, because, you know, it's a dog whistle. You can't say what you really mean, so you have to defend the thing in such a way that fewer people of the Caucasian persuasion will find it offensive than not. And that goes back to Nikki Haley's answer, right? That's the reason why she couldn't honestly state the cause of the Civil War, because it would piss off a bunch of people that she considers her base, that she needs to vote for her in the presidential primary. And should she make it to the general election, she'll worry about the harms that come from that when she gets there. And I know what you're thinking. Nikki Haley, is she white? No, she's in fact of Indian descent. first generation immigrant. Her family moved here from India at a time when the civil rights movement was in full swing, as well as a movement of white backlash. You know, and I can't necessarily speak to her parents' points of view on this. I can only intuit. But coming from a country where a caste system is prevalent, I can only imagine that bringing their having a little brown daughter here in America and witnessing the way our caste system tends to disfavor people of darker complexions. They wanted to do their best in putting Nikki in a position to succeed later on in life. And so one of the things that eventually occurred in Nikki Haley's youth is she was placed in one of these private academies that sprung up all across the South as a response to integration. These private schools that were basically pro-white, pro-Civil War, pro-whitewashing history. And as you can imagine, Nikki Haley, while maybe not particularly being interested in the oppression of black people herself, grew up in an environment where, you know, she wanted to be white passing. So with that comes adopting mindsets and principles and points of view that reflect those philosophies. You're going so far as to change her name from Nimrod to Haley to Nikki. So, yeah, I think that pretty much sums up where Nikki is coming from on this. She ain't down for the cause. She not here for my people. She's running for president in the wrong party, though. She'd have a way better shot as a woman of color running for president in the party where people of color tend to vote, and not in the party where white people tend to vote against people. I don't know. It's like she hasn't thought this through. Doesn't seem she's given this quite the level of scrutiny that it deserves. Her decision-making process seems to be quite flawed. Quite flawed. But alas, what can you do? I mean, if these people can't tell you the truth about the Civil fucking War, what will they be willing to lie about? Well, a lot. A whole ass lie. A whole lot of shit. And speaking of lying liars who lie, Ronna McDaniel, chairwoman of the RNC, the Republican National Committee, and this is not going to come as a shock to anyone, was directly involved in attempting to overturn the 2020 election, undermining the will of the majority of voters who voted for Biden in an attempt to steal the election and have Trump remain in the White House. So, Ronna Romney, of course, that's Mitt Romney's niece. I can imagine they're probably not on the best of terms right now. Look, we all got family drama, right? Typically, we don't have family drama over trying to overthrow the fucking United States government, I would imagine. But anyway, she had previously testified to the January 6th committee in 2022 that, one, Trump was directly involved and the fake elector scheme, along with John Eastman, which, you know, of course, this is actually fact. So congratulations to her on not lying about everything. And she said, here are direct words when talking about the RNC's involvement with John Eastman. On a phone call with Trump, Trump turned over the phone to Eastman, who proceeded to talk about the importance of the RNC helping the campaign gather these contingent electors in case any of these legal challenges that were ongoing change the results of any of the states. I think more just helping them reach out and assemble them. That was Nikki Haley relaying Eastman's comments on the phone, and her testimony to the January 6th committee was saying that her understanding is the campaign did take the lead and that we, the RNC, were just helping them in that role. As it turns out, Ronna McDaniel was far more involved in the plot to steal the 2020 election and overturn the will of the voters than previously noted. As it's been reported, that Trump and McDaniel were on the phone with a couple of local Michigan Republican officials who represented a county that included Detroit, where Rana and Trump are directly telling them in November of 2020, telling them directly, do not certify the presidential election results from their county. And it gets worse than that, as Ronna McDaniel's exact words are, if you can go home tonight, do not sign it. We will get you attorneys, which is a very rut-roll moment, very, very bribe-like, offering some sort of benefit in exchange for an official act. It feels pretty cut and dry. You know, I was suggesting Ronna lawyer up. This isn't looking great. This tape directly ties her into a conspiracy to steal the 2020 election, of which a number of other people have been indicted, including Trump and, you know, John Eastman, whom she previously testified being in cahoots with as far as the fake electors go. And I don't think this is going too well for the RNC either. I assume Ron is not the only person involved in this. So I would imagine, like I said, you know, should anything happen with Trump's DC case and it potentially being delayed until close to or after the election, I feel like that's going to give Jack Smith the freedom to just unleash indictment hell on all of Trump's co-conspirators. And Ronald McDaniel will probably be one of them. And you would think after this phone call, maybe the RNC would look at their chairwoman potentially being an accessory to multiple crimes and be like, hey, maybe we should get this bitch up out of here. But that appears to not be the case. And one of the GOP officials she was talking to, Monica Palmer, had previously testified to the January 6th committee that she didn't remember any specifics of any phone call she might have had with Trump or McDaniel. So, yeah, I might want to lawyer up as well. Because I feel like with such a clear and convincing phone call as this, that might be perjury. It's not sounding great. And then considering the fact that this individual had intended to certify the election results and then didn't after this phone call, yeah, it's not looking great. Not looking great. Michigan did, however, ultimately end up certifying the election results for Joe Biden, but, you know, Trump's co-conspirators in the state eventually sent a slate of fake elector votes to the National Archives saying that Trump won the state's 2020 election. Those 16 Republican fake electors have since been indicted on felony charges for signing it. So I assume this means more indictments to come. It's like, you know, it's like Oprah on Christmas. Reach under your chair. You get an indictment. You get an indictment. You get an indictment. I'm telling you, more indictments are coming. And this is coming from the guy who told you that Trump was going to be indicted in the first place. Like, when the feds raided Mar-a-Lago, I was like, look, man, indictments are coming. And they came. And then once we got evidence from the January 6th committee that seemed to be overwhelming, I was like, look, guys, DOJ has been on this before the January 6th committee even started. Indictments are coming. And look where we are. We're potentially 3 months away from a Trump trial. I mean, again, given no shenanigans at the Supreme Court. More indictments are coming. Investigators aren't done. Not only is Jack Smith done, but it appears as though these states aren't finished investigating and charging individuals involved in this criminal conspiracy. And I think that's become even more apparent after, you know, the Kenneth Cheeseborough World Tour, where he's going to swing state after swing state, confessing to all of the elements of the plot that he was involved in trying to steal the 2020 election. Now, it's been reported that Cheeseborough hasn't been contacted by Jack Smith's team. And I don't actually think that's a good thing for Cheeseborough. Like, if he's going around state after state trying to cooperate and get himself out of legal jeopardy in all of these different jurisdictions, but he hasn't had the opportunity to strike a deal with Jack Smith, that still leaves him vulnerable when it comes to federal charges. So he might need to go ahead and, I don't know, be proactive about getting in touch with Jack Smith's team and making a proffer and potentially becoming a cooperating witness. Because like I said, you know, it appears as though Jack Smith is very interested in the information Cheeseboro has, but isn't very interested in Cheeseboro. Like, he's been in contact with these other state and local prosecutors who are filing these charges, trying to get the evidence from their cases to add to his own. And it's like he's cutting Cheeseboro out of the loop. Which, again, it just doesn't bode well, bro. Better start making some phone calls, homie. And if you're pleased that Trumpers continue to receive such bad news, I have one more notable bit of information for you. So, as you remember, the Colorado Supreme Court ruled that Trump was ineligible to appear on the Colorado ballot. But they stayed that ruling until early January, in case Trump filed an appeal with the Supreme Court, meaning that Trump stays on the ballot until either the deadline or he files an appeal. Republicans in the state, they have since filed their own appeal to the Supreme Court, which means that Trump will remain on the primary ballot until the Supreme Court takes up the case. I still don't know what Trump is doing, like why he's sitting around on this. No idea. But anyway, I guess you can consider that a temporary win for Trump, because the Supreme Court will eventually have to take this case up. And whether they do that in a timely fashion or not is fairly relevant, for the obvious reason that Republicans need to know definitively whether or not Trump is even eligible for office, because they would be quite committed with Trump on the primary ballot, winning the primary and getting votes in a presidential election, only to find out that he's actually ineligible for office. So, you know, the Republicans, or rather if the conservatives, they're fucking Republicans. If the Republicans on the Supreme Court want to do their party a favor, they'll get the answer to this out as quickly as possible. But I mean, I guess they could potentially try and delay ruling on this case until after the election itself, in which case, if Trump wins, they're not going to kick him out of office. I mean, they only do that to Democrats. Shout out to you, Al Gore. My apologies on their behalf. But also, this isn't the only state where it's an issue, because after Republicans in Colorado filed their appeal, you know, Republicans were celebrating. Trump's back. Yay. Woo. And Maine was like, psych. So the Secretary of State in Maine, based on a lot of evidence that was used in the Colorado trial where Trump was found to have been engaged in insurrection, the Secretary of State ruled that Trump is ineligible for the presidential ballot in Maine, thanks to Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. So he's off the ballot in Maine now. And Republicans are mad. They are big mad, yo. They're almost as mad as they were about Colorado. Senator Susan Collins herself is quite irate, saying that, you know, it's wrong that Trump is being removed from the ballot and the voters should decide. Well, they weren't talking out of noise on January 6th when all the Republicans were trying to undo the will of the voters with the fucking fake elector slates and an attack on the fucking Capitol. That's why Trump's being barred from office now. Did it to himself. And they weren't talking about will of the voters in 2016 when Hillary Clinton got 3 million more votes than Trump. No. They loved the Constitution then, thanks to the Electoral College. They do not, however, love the Constitution when they get to the 14th Amendment. Go well, guys. Now, obviously, the Supreme Court, dominated by nutjob conservatives, will have the opportunity to shred the Constitution to pieces and ignore the facts entirely and rule that states effectively don't have the power to remove Trump from the presidential ballot, which is insane, because I feel like states would have the power to remove candidates who are running for state office from the ballot. Even candidates that are running for federal office, like House Representative or Senator. Good luck to the Supreme Court trying to thread that fucking needle. They're going to try, though, I would imagine. Although, I mean, like, the one way they could get themselves out of this is just bar Trump. Like, just pull the trigger on it. Get him out of the way. Get him out of the fucking party. Yeah, you're going to get destroyed in 2024, but you can move on. You can fucking prepare for 2028. Like, you can move into the future of the party. Change your platform. Like, get rid of the nut jobs and the insanity. Get back on. I mean, you know, they've always been fucking crazy since the Civil Rights Act, but like, this is an opportunity to reinvent your party and save yourselves. And but like, the gun is to their own head, but it's in their hands. They don't have to pull the trigger. They can put the gun down. They can rid themselves of this problem for good. The thing with these conservative justices, though, is that they already have the public perception that they're in the bag for Trump. So if they go out of their way to bail Trump out, at least as far as being on the ballot, even though the language of the 14th Amendment is pretty fucking clear about this, they're going to drive massive Democratic turnout in the 2024 election, because that, along with overturning Roe v. Wade, people are going to want a president in power that can fix the fucking Supreme Court and replace their asses, or at the very least expand the court to undo this fucking nonsense. But look, it's all in their hands. And like, this Trump thing being on the ballot is huge for a lot of reasons. I mean, obviously, if he's ineligible for office, like, he won't be president in 2024. But even beyond that, not having Trump on the ballot in a handful of states, besides who the president will be, is who gets votes down ballot. Like, if Trump isn't on the ticket, like, MAGA voters aren't going to turn out to vote for governors or senators and representatives, state legislatures, you know, secretaries of state. Like, this could potentially cause the House to flip, or help Democrats keep the Senate, or flip state legislatures, or save Democratic governors. Like, if Trump isn't on the ballot, MAGA votes in those states will in all likelihood be depressed. And you know how I know this? Because Susan Collins is out here losing her mind. She ain't even on the ballot. But there is a Democrat in Maine who is up for re-election, and we need that dude to keep his seat so Democrats can keep the Senate. And if Trump ain't on the ballot, that dude's probably a shoo-in. You can also take a look at Colorado, where the Supreme Court there ruled that Trump was ineligible. It's no surprise that Lauren Boebert decided to leave her district for an even safer district, even though Trump won her district, Colorado District 4, by about 8 in 2020. Why is she moving? Because if Trump ain't on the ballot, she ain't going to get no fucking votes. And it was pretty fucking close in 2022, where she barely, like, by the seat of her pants, kept her seat. No Trump, no Boebert. No Boebert, Dems win the House. And that concludes this episode of Pardon the Insurrection.